I'm Mindy, and I'm an addict. All right, y'all are some good-looking people. Sobriety looks good on you. My recovery date is April 2nd of 2013. I entered Austin Recovery on April 2nd of 2013, and I've been clean ever since. What it was like, what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. What happened was a lot of shit. A lot. And I don't know what a normal childhood is, so I don't question that anymore. I was raised by my dad till I was about 9, and then I was raised by my mom from 9 to 18. And I remember my first interaction with alcohol was I was probably about 4 years old, and my dad had a beer can on the side of the bed, on the side bed table, and I took a drink of it, and it had ashes in it. And I remember that kept me from it for a while. When I was 7, my uncle was stabbed in a drunken brawl in downtown Dallas. And then when I was about 12 or 13, I went with a friend and her dad out to White Rock Lake. He had bought us a bunch of alcohol to drink, and before we even really opened it, the cops showed up, and I got a minor in possession at 13 years old. Long and behold, that girl's father was a pedophile, and he had other plans for us, so by the saving grace of Dallas police, that did not happen. So the first time I really got drunk, I was like 15 or 16 with a bunch of guys in a field getting wasted. Started smoking pot, 16, 17, and continued those two addictions until I got sober on April 2nd of 2013. Cocaine showed up, you know, around 21. I ran with that until I got sober, and methamphetamine showed up about 29, and I ran with that until I got sober. One thing I've learned is my bottom isn't your bottom, and your bottom isn't my bottom. When we start comparing bottoms, one seems greater or lesser than the other. Your bottom's your bottom, and my bottom is my bottom. And what happened in the last couple years of me using was as low as I ever want to go. So with that said, I'm a florist. I've been a floral designer off and on since I was 21. I would get a job. I would do really good for like 2 years, and then I would quit, and then I would go do dope for about 2-3 years. The last year of using, I wasn't an IV user, but I would stick whatever I could up my nose, and I was good with that. So the last year or two of using, I went to jail about 7 times. A bunch of people died. When I entered Austin Recovery, I was on 2 bonds, and when I walked to the door, I couldn't lift my head up. I also showed up with like 10 pairs of flip-flops and 6 tank tops and 2 pairs of shorts, and they're like, you can't wear tank tops. And I was like, well. I slept my first 2 days. I did not want to be here, but I had nowhere else to go. And I literally had nowhere else to go. I remember a few days in, I met with a counselor, and I was still quite defiant on what I was doing here and if I ever really wanted to be sober and if I had any interest in y'all's way of life. And my counselor said to me, she said, Mindy, I'm here to advocate for you. And when she said that to me, no one had ever said that. And I was like, I mean, it like hit me like in my soul. And I thought, all right, I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to do this. And we had some good times in here. Me and my little graduating class of, you know, Austin Recovery, we used to joke around and smoke cigarettes and talk about who we knew and what we did and how we did it. And I thank God every day that I made it here. So after I got out of Austin Recovery, I am from Dallas, so I went back to Dallas, and I kind of gathered my things and decided I was going to move down here to Austin. It was best for me. Dallas was my playground, and me being there was not safe. So I moved down to Austin with my dog and a bunch of clothes I had stolen. And, you know, sober houses wouldn't take my dog, and so I ended up finding, like, this little efficiency that I sublet, and I stayed there for the summer. You know, 40 days in, I'm going to talk a lot about the first year because it's really important that I share my first year with y'all. So 40 days in, I found a sponsor. I was not willing to have a female sponsor. I didn't trust females. I wasn't ready to open up to females. So I found the next best thing. I found a gay male. And he is a light of my life. I thank God every day for him. And I also, I went to a lot of meetings, a lot of AA meetings. And for a long time, especially that first year, my favorite line in the Big Book was, "We are not saints." And I would even ride the bus to the We Are Not Saints meeting because I really connected with the We Are Not Saints. And I didn't want to be a saint, and I felt that a lot of people that in recovery were saint-like, and it really freaked me out. At like 60 days sober, my stepsister, who was my running buddy the last 2 years of using and drinking, she killed herself. And I remember I got the call, and I remember calling my sponsor. My sponsor said, "You need to go to a meeting." So I got on the bus. Of course, I didn't have a car or a driver's license or any of that kind of stuff yet. And I went down to Western Trails, and I went to a meeting. And then I got back on the bus, and then I went to another meeting up north, like a 5:30 meditation meeting. And then I went to an 8 p.m. meeting. And it was a turning point in my early recovery of, I can either stay sober or I can go get fucked up over my sister killing herself. And I chose to stay sober. And like Dennis said, him and I instantly became friends. And his substance of choice was right there along with mine. And so we had a big connection on a lot of things. And that, I'll tell you, is really, really important within your first few months of sobriety and your first few months of being out of Austin recovery. I found the fellowship of CMA, which is Crystal Meth Anonymous, and I became, it became sacred to me. That was my home group. It was just a turning point. That was my home group for 2 years. About, let me think here. Let's say about 6 months in, I started hanging out with this guy, and he was cool, and he had 2 years, and he was an Austin alumni, too. And then he told me he didn't want to see me anymore. And I was like, well, fuck. but I had learned some coping skills. And oddly to myself, I didn't know I had learned these skills. And instead of my old behavior of calling someone 45 times or texting them 100 times or kicking down their door or whatever I felt I needed to do to get that male's attention, I respected him. And I said, okay. And, you know, what a blessing that was that I had come to some sort of understanding of how I needed to act towards other people, especially other people in recovery. It took me about 9 months till I could look people in their eyes. It took about 9 months till I could actually remember who people were. I have a friend, and every after every meeting on Friday night, he would walk up to me, and he would say, "Mindy, we're going to go to the movies and go eat. Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "No, I don't want to go eat, and I don't want to go to the movies." And it took about 9 months till I even recognized who that person was. And, you know, they say that the light comes on in your eyes or the fog's lifted, and it's true. And it was around that time that I could look people in their eyes and I could say, you know, "Hi, I'm in recovery." After a year of being sober, life started going. You know, I started waiting tables at a restaurant with three other friends that were in recovery, and we had the best time waiting tables together. And the thought of going back to my chosen career was not an option. I could not mentally, I couldn't do it. I was healing. I was in a lot of pain. I was working the steps. I was paying attention to my fellowship and my new friends. I had to learn patience about myself and about my future. I was going to say something, I forgot. I got a job. I'm going to go back just a little bit. I got a job at about 4 or 5 months sober, and I was working at this, like, it wasn't quite a boutique, but it was off Lamar, and it was kind of fancy, and I was like, this will be great for me. And then about a week into it, I was deciding what I was going to steal. And it was like, I don't think you need to be working here because your criminal behaviors are coming out. And I had to quit. It wasn't going to work. Those old behaviors, once you get sober and you get clean and your true identity starts to want to be, those old behaviors try to knock you down. And you have to be aware of that. And I had to be aware of that. And it took time and just talking to others. And, I'm very fortunate that I didn't keep that job and steal a bunch of shit and go back to jail. After a year of sobriety, my court dates started showing up. Those bonds that I were out on, I had to drive up to Dallas and go to court and go to court again. And I was really frustrated because I was a year sober, and why did I have to do this now? And that year of sobriety, it paid off in its own way. The courts kind of looked at it like, you're doing the right thing. So I got put on probation for 4 years, and I remember I went to meet my probation officer over there north off Burnett, and she gave me this little card, and she's like, you need to get this signed by the chair of your meetings. And I was like, motherfucker, I gotta pass this card around after being sober for a year. But that's what I needed, and today I know that. Lots of people go back out. Your friends will go back out. People you come close with go back out. Someone with 30 years will go back out. And it's really, really like, you don't know if you want to like put yourself in a cave or if you want to try to save them. And I had to find a middle ground between both of those because I couldn't save them and I couldn't act like it wasn't happening. And what did happen is the people who were staying sober or the people who were staying clean and working a program of recovery, I became very much closer with those people. And today those people are still very close to me and they're my friends. And I'm very lucky to say that. My third year, I moved to Florida. My husband, who was not my husband yet, had went to treatment out in Florida. And he ended up staying, and I ended up deciding to move out there with him. And it was a shit show. And it was not good for me. It was not good for him. He was lying and using and manipulating, and I married him anyways. Denial is a powerful thing. It's a really powerful thing. 6 to 8 months into the marriage, I left him. I came back to Austin. The community that I had made here accepted me with open arms. Me and my little dogs and my U-Haul of wedding gifts came back to Austin, and it was hard. But I knew that using was not an option. And I had to really say that on a daily basis. And I would hear in early recovery, take it day by day, one day at a time, 24 hours. And I used to hate hearing that because it's like, I have a life to live. Like, I'm ready for you know, 3 months from now. And in those moments, I had to learn to live within the next 24 hours. So I was here in Austin for 9 more months. It was not easy. Some depression kicked in, some chemical imbalance that I had done to my brain from using for all those years started to really affect me, and it was time for me to seek outside help. And if you in fear of outside help, your body will let you know when outside help is needed. And you know, that's what happened there. I got a job at a great florist here in Austin. So at this point in my recovery, which was about 4 years or so, I was back in the profession that I had always loved. And, you know, I went with it. And to this day, I work for a big event company in Tampa, and the career side of my life is in bloom. Like something comes to my mind right before, like when I'm talking about something else, and it blank out. The first year I was very involved in Austin alumni, and I came to this meeting every Sunday, and I came to the Wednesday meeting, and we had a great time, and went to the barbecues, and went to the lake, and did all this stuff, and it was fabulous, and I wouldn't take it back for anything in the world. And, you know, there was this one time, I don't know, maybe 5 months sober, maybe not even that, 3 months sober. I was watching a girl's baby. She had been in family house, and she had went back out, and I offered to watch her baby for, like, a week. And Dennis and I had become friends, and he had this wild BMW that didn't have, like, the windows wouldn't roll up or down, and the hood was bent up, and he goes, "Are you going to the barbecue?" I said, "Well, I got this baby. Well, I'll come get the baby." And then someone else called Dennis, "You going to the barbecue?" So Dennis had me, him, this really big guy in the front seat, and this other guy, and we're flying down 35, and we look like a bunch of junkies with a baby. And and we were sober as shit, and we were coming to the barbecue. And, you know, just like free. And okay. I do want to say this. You know, men, recovery looks good on you. It's a very attractive thing. When you get to know yourself and you become an authentic man and you don't fucking be a dope zombie, it's very attractive to be sober. And if you don't think so, take a picture of yourself now and look at your mugshot, and you'll tell that things are getting better. And to the women, the patience of getting to know yourself, the patience of finding the authentic you, the inner soul that went away whenever running and gunning was the thing that you did. And to the mamas in the house, I want to say that there are women in recovery that cannot have children. They have lost their children. They don't see their children. Their children have died. There's grandmothers that can't see their grandchildren. There's older women who never had children. There's situations where other women will help you. If you need to go to a meeting, those women will watch your babies for you. They'll go to the meeting and meet you at the meeting, let you go to the meeting, and they'll sit out with your children. So don't let that be a reason why you don't make it to a meeting or you don't want to continue in a fellowship. I've been a part of 3 fellowships, CMA, Crystal Meth Anonymous, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and NA, Narcotics Anonymous. And I have nothing bad to say about any of them. At each point in my life where I went to that fellowship, it's what I needed. It's where my higher power led me, and I don't regret being in one fellowship or the other. Might work for me, might not work for you. Once again, this is my story, not yours. Like, that's one thing that I really had to learn. I can't tell you what to do, and you can't tell me what to do. And when judgment comes along, you're in a bad place, in a bad, bad place. I have a sponsor now. She looks like Mary Poppins, but she's mean as fuck. And one time I called her. Her name is Paula S. And I said, well, I just really don't understand, how to comprehend people going back out or, when people choose to go back out and they die. Like, I'm kind of struggling with this, Paula. And she said, what do you mean? I work really hard on my sobriety and better them than me. And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, that's kind of harsh. The lady's been sober for 30 years. So I can only imagine all the people that she's known that died and went back out. And that's what works for her, then that's what works for her. I don't know if I'll ever say that to any of my sponsees, but she has no problem saying it to hers. She also tells me it's none of my fucking business. And the first time she told me that it wasn't none of my fucking business, I guess it's none of my business. None of my business what that person does. There's like 8 of us from my home group in Austin. We all got together and we did the 12 steps in codependency. I wasn't really into going to a CODA meeting because I didn't want to deal with codependency people. But, we all got together and worked the 12 steps of CODA, and it really, really changed. It absolutely helped me. I'm on vacation. I left Florida. I went to a family friend that I've known for my whole entire life. I drove to Georgia. I stayed with her. She's very yogi, very namaste, and it was just a really great time. Then I managed to make it through Alabama and Mississippi. My father lives in Arkansas. And I also have a really great friend that I've known since I was 5. She lives in Arkansas, so I went to her house. We had a great time. And in this process, my dad has been missing. He is one of us. He's like 65 years old, and he's been running and gunning for 45 years now. And he was missing. So I had to fit in, finding him, having a vacation, keeping my sobriety and my sanity as I'm on this venture. I managed to find him. He was in an outreach program. He's homeless. And he just got out of treatment, and he had 32 days of sobriety. And I said, thank God I don't have to take him to Austin Recovery. and I took him, the court shit. Take me here, and I got to give this paper to the DMV and all, And I did that for him because I love him. And somebody did it for me when I had just gotten out of treatment. And then I told him that I had to go and that, that this was his journey and I can't keep him sober. And so then I drove to Dallas where my mother lives and listened to her talk for 3 days about what I should have, would have, and could do. And then I came to Austin and with my fellowship and with the people who love me and the people I got sober with. And I'm really happy to see Tara here. Tara and I were in Austin treatment together. I know if I ever needed anything, I could call her. We live really far from each other, but if I ever needed to talk, she remembers me when I walked in and I couldn't hold my head up. And for someone to see me at that point and see me today is a fucking miracle. And if you got to be willing to admit that you're a fucking miracle, and you also got to be willing to admit that you want to live. And I can do that today. And it's been a journey. Now my favorite line in the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous is trudging the road to happy destiny. It is so true. Life gets going. Shit happens. My husband's been in $2,000 every 10 days on opiates. That wasn't easy. That wasn't easy to, there's nothing easy about it. But I didn't use over it. you know? That's his deal. How much time I got? Jeez. I'm a meth addict. We talk really fast. Okay, we'll talk about step 9. I had a very deep spiritual experience with step 9, and it wasn't because I had called someone and said, you know, I did you wrong. It was because I was in the middle of step 9, and I lived in this little efficiency, and my best friend Dennis lived in front. So he lived in the front efficiency, and I lived in the back efficiency, and we were very good at keeping each other accountable. But I was laying on my bed, and I was in the middle of my ninth step, and I looked out the window, and I saw all these little birds chirping. And I had to remember when I was using and drinking that whatever the effect I was on. And the next morning when those little birds started chirping, I used to freak the fuck out. And I used to think about killing those little birds. I used to think about poisoning those little birds. There was times when I thought the birds were the FBI. Like, there was some sick shit going on with me and those birds. And so I'm sober, and I look out the window, and I see those little birds, and I got in my car, which now I had, and I drove to Dollar General, and I bought a bird feeder, and I bought bird seed, and I hung it up in the tree, and from that day forward, I watched those little birds eat and live their lives, and I helped them, and that was a huge amends back to the universe, and it helped me realize that I have to be a part of the universe. I have to give back. Things that I hated and people, not so much people, but, you know, things in the universe that I hated, I had to be kind to it. I had to be caring, and I had to fully come around spiritually from the person that I was when I was using. Another part of step 9 was I had a whole list of people that I owed money to and institutions that I owed money to and a bunch of money I had stolen from wherever. I'm not going to name any names, but and I wrote down a list of all those financial amends, and I was not comfortable going back to some of those places or people and giving them their money back. So usually every month I make a donation to the charity of my choice, and I put that money that I took away from the universe, and I put it back into the universe. And some days it's $5, and you know, some months it's $50, but it keeps me aligned with my recovery, the authentic woman that I have become, and some dignity and integrity about my life. Study the traditions. If you're going to be in a fellowship of your choice, and you're going to be a part of that fellowship and be a member of that fellowship, it's worth it to study the traditions. Some people act really fucking crazy in a meeting that haven't studied the traditions. And when you have, you feel a little bit better about them being crazy and you not being so crazy. And it's as simple as that. You know, I remember my sponsor was like, now we get to, he would say, I love the traditions. And now we get to, you know, we're going to go over the traditions. And I was like, Jesus Christ, fucking traditions. Step 3, I work on every day. My will is very powerful. It is no joke to me that, you know, I think I turned my will and my power over to God, and I am just gracefully strolling around the universe like Mary Poppins. No, my will is in there saying, you know, Mindy, do this, Mindy, do that. Vengeance is a huge character defect of mine, and I have to remember that. When I did the third step the first time, when I was however many months sober, I did it, and I was like, okay, you know, I had this spiritual experience with it and was all about it. And then, like, 2 months later, I freaked out that I had given my power over to God, and God was so big, and I didn't think God liked me, and I had a bunch of shame and shit over my life. And so I had to really dumb it down for myself, and, you know, my grandmother had died when I was a little girl. I knew she loved me, and I knew that she was with her higher power. And so I prayed to her. And praying to her opened the gates to a higher power. And that worked for me until I had a real relationship with my higher power. So I hear a lot people go do the third step. They get ready to do the fourth step. Fourth step freaks them out. Then they go back out and use. And then they blame the fourth step of why they used. And then they end up back in treatment. Or they end up dead. Or they end up in jail. And it could take 3 months. It could take 2 days. It could take 45 years like my dad. You know, there's just no telling how much time we have here on this earth. So I just kind of share that with you because the higher power thing can really throw people off. And it really, really helped me in that time, you know. We'll see what else we got. I struggle most with step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I do not like admitting that I'm wrong. I don't like doing anything promptly, and I don't like reviewing my day. And I don't do it every day, but I do it often enough that I'm not trucking around with a bunch of chips on my shoulder about what I think should happen and what shouldn't happen and what that person did and what this person did and blah, 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 blah. I live a pretty carefree spiritual life. And step 10 comes into a lot of play with that, even though I don't really like the step. Sometimes me just standing up here saying, "Hi, I'm Mindy, I'm an addict," is part of step one. Very aware that my life was unmanageable. I have the arrest record to prove it to myself. I have the blah, 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 blah to prove it to myself. And the denial of step one, I didn't struggle with. I didn't struggle with it at all. I don't struggle with it today. I don't have any interest in using. I don't have any interest in drinking. And I really don't have any interest in being around anyone who fucking does. People, places, and things. He's not here. I don't even know if he still comes to alumni. But there was an alumni, and he would say, "You can't go to the dope house and get people sober." And I was like, "Who the fuck goes to the dope house sober? You know, like, what the fuck? You already got to be fucked up to be going to the dope house." And it's true, you know, like, you can't go to the dope house to try to get people sober. Things I didn't really understand, like, well, what's up with things? But to this day, I cannot sit and make jewelry. I used to tweak out on jewelry and crafts and fucking painting and whatever else I could fucking meth out on. And so, to this day, I really don't think about making jewelry. Freaks me out. People, places, things, people. It's not even up there, and I'm just like looking. Okay. It's hard to cut someone off in your life who has no interest in seeing you sober or being sober. And as time goes on and you have some recovery, you're working the steps, those people just tend to fade away. Your higher power tends to deal with that. I have one friend that I talk to, not really on the phone or anything. Sometimes she'll like my shit on Facebook, whatever, that I used to use with. And she told me once, "I really respect what you're doing." And that was enough for me to say, thank you. You know? Half the other people think I'm a cop, so it doesn't really matter. You know, like, I took a lot of naps my first year. I would go to family functions, and I would have to go take a nap. They really stressed me out. They didn't understand. They all kind of looked at me, you know, like, "How you doing?" It's like, "Fucking sober. How do you think I'm doing?" You know, like, I got this shit going on. you know, right? Just leave me alone for a minute. And I felt guilty about taking naps. Like, I was like, maybe I shouldn't be taking a nap. Like, maybe this is addict behavior. And then I was in a meeting once, and a woman who had 7 years said, I took naps for my first 4 years. And I was like, well, then I'm good. Like, you know, like, I'm fine. And so I have 6 years, and I still take my naps. And I need it. I need the quiet time. I have a mind that goes and goes and goes. And I, it's amazing what you think about when you're sober and what you don't think about. I had the opportunity to take a young woman who was also an Austin Recovery alumni through the steps, and it was the first woman I had ever sponsored, and so I just did what my sponsor did. And then she came and she heard my story once at my home group at CMA, and she stood up and she said, I just want to thank you for being a part of my spiritual awakening. And I was like, it's like the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. And I got the real understanding of step 12 and being of service to others and getting out of yourself. I shared today in a meeting that my friends used to call me, Mindy, and I was all about myself all the time, whether it be self-seeking, self-pity. It was the Mindy Show 100%, and I don't live like that anymore. And I have two sponsees now. I had five like 3 weeks ago, and one went to treatment, and one never called again, and then the other one went to treatment, you know, and it's like, what the fuck? Where was I? Like, what happened? Why didn't y'all call me? You know, but that's their shit. I'm their sponsor. I'm here to take them through the steps. I'm not here to be their mother. I'm not even here to be their sister or their friend. Like, let's work the 12 steps. Let's go through the traditions and get the ball rolling. Did you go to a meeting today? Send me your gratitude list. That kind of shit, you know? So, isolation. You'll hear a lot about isolation as you stay clean. I don't have anything good to say about isolation. It will take anyone back out. It will fuck with anyone's mind. It'll tell you you're a piece of shit. It'll tell you no one loves you. It'll tell you to go get whatever substance you want because you don't like those people anyways, you know? So I just want to say be aware of how you're isolating. I think I have 5 more minutes. Okay. If you're just here for the food or the juice or whatever the fuck you're in Austin Recovery for, and you have no interest in being sober or staying clean, don't be a martyr to the person who is serious about it. It is not fair to them. It is not fair to Austin Recovery as itself. And, you know, if this is just going to be another notch in your treatment belt, fuck off.